Well, look, it's a great pleasure to have you here. And look, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but I realised this morning that news of your resignation had reached even the American media. I was reading about you on the Huffington Post, but there's this sort of story going about that you're walking out 5 years early, you're questioning the Vatican, rebel bishop leaves the fold. What's going on?
Well, I suppose that will always be part of the story, Genevieve. And I must say, I was a little bit annoyed at the Sun Herald on Sunday. That little headline they had there was Critic Bishop Quits Church. Well, I mean, what I've been about all the time is trying to enable people to remain within the fold of the church. And but for all of that, I can understand that people might ask that question too, because 75 is the normal retiring age for bishops and parish priests. I'd always set myself to go to 70. I didn't really say too much about that along the line, because I thought maybe when I get to 70 I might feel otherwise about it. But as the time got closer, I knew that it was the right time to go. And I'd seen people like politicians sports people and other people within the church who've just gone on too long. And I think just knowing when to quit is really important. And your last person that you interviewed, Andrew Locke, I thought that was, he very demonstrated that very beautifully with when he said he just knew when to quit, even so close to the summit. Yeah. And so ever since I've made the decision, definitely, I've known it has been the right decision.
Now, I know you're a Queanbeyan local, a local born and bred, but perhaps we should start with why you wanted to become a priest and whether that's sort of held true through all those years.
Genevieve, I was actually born in Cooma but did grow up in Queanbeyan, so I always regard myself as a Queanbeyan boy. And in fact, I was in there on Sunday. They gave me a little farewell there. I've been helping out with the masses there a little bit anyhow, but they had a morning tea afterwards and a very generous presentation too, I might add. And so Queanbeyan has been important to me, and I think just growing up in that town, they call Queanbeyan derisively Struggle Town sometimes, but I never mind that little epithet, because I think in many ways it characterises the spirit of the people there. And I learnt a lot of that from my own father too. I mean, he was in the St Vincent de Paul Society. He was did one term on the town council. He was on the hospital board. And in those days, after the post-war migration was coming to Queanbeyan, a lot of what we call the New Australians were there, and Dad was a Justice of the Peace. And not only did he sign their papers and everything, but he really helped them to find their way in a new country. And my mother was just so beautiful and welcoming. I often say the unconditional love of God. She was someone that was just a beautiful personification of that. The Catholic faith was always important in our family, and I must say that even as a little boy making my first Holy Communion, age 7, I thought about the priesthood then, and it really never left me. I mean, not that I was always going to be a priest, but it was always there, and I never really thought about doing anything else. And yet, when people had come along to the school to promote religious vocations, and if you're asked to give any indication if you're thinking about it, I never owned up to it, because I didn't want.
You kept it a deep dark secret.
Well,
did
I didn't want. I didn't want to be hassled over it, and yet it was always there. And when I got to the end of my school time, I did my primary schooling at St Christopher's here in Canberra, with the Good Samaritan Sisters. I was a foundation student of St Edmund's the first 2 years it opened, 1954 and 1955, with the Christian Brothers, and then the last 3 years at Chevalier College at Barrel, and the Missionaries of the Sacred Heart taught me there. And I look back now and see that the spirituality of each of those three different groups of people really did have quite an impact on me, as well as, of course, the family influence being there. And but when it came to leaving school, I still had the desire to be a priest, but I wasn't sure that that's what I was cut out to be. And in other words, did God really want me to do it? And so I'd more or less decided I'd go to uni and do a science course and then see what happened after that. And just before I went back to boarding school for my last term, the local assistant priest, Father Lloyd Reynolds, whom I had a great admiration for, asked me, have I thought about the priesthood? And I said yes. And I said, just to him just what I've just said to you. And he said, well, there's 7 years training for the priesthood. It's a time for discernment, and maybe that's the place where you could work out whether you wanted to be a priest or not. And that made sense to me, and so I decided I would. But I've got to say that even in the seminary itself, that was 7 years of training, it was probably only, I was about 5 years there before I began to get some confidence that I would eventually be ordained to the priesthood.
So this is a journey of trust, isn't it? It's a journey of following the leap of faith.
I suppose. Yeah. I suppose, but, and I must say, the seminary days, I didn't find all that easily. It was easy. It was a very constrained sort of atmosphere there, whereas at Chevalier College, it wasn't Rafferty's rules, but, I mean, you could give a bit of cheek to the teachers without the sky falling in, and whereas in the seminary, you couldn't look sideways without fear of being tapped on the shoulder and told that you weren't suitable.
Were there times either then or during your later journey when you harboured doubts about the church, whether you wondered whether you really belonged either as a priest or in the church at all?
I can honestly say, Genevieve, that that question never arose for me. I can honestly say that there hasn't been a day when I haven't thanked God for the gift of the priesthood. Now, that doesn't mean I haven't had some tough days in the time, but I've always known that that's where I've meant to be, and I don't say that with any sense of patting myself on the back. I think that's been just a great gift that God has given me, and, of course, all the beautiful people who have been part of my life have really, really, I've seen, you know, the face of Christ in those people. And I'm not just talking about Catholics here, but people right across the board.
When has it been most challenging?
I'd have to say that whole sexual abuse thing, I think I've found terribly difficult. And I've had good friends in prison, and I've really made the effort to support them. But when I've seen the horrible effects that it's had on the people who have been abused, and just seeing the way in which their whole life has been shattered, really, as a result of it, that great betrayal of trust that there's been, I'd say undoubtedly that's been the most difficult thing, and it's come at a little bit of a cost to me, I must say. I've just found, the ongoing dealing with people on both sides of the equation and the families and my fellow priests too, it's been very hard for them because in many ways they don't have the freedom that I would have experienced as a young priest when I was ordained in 1965 to reach out the way that we were in those days. So that's an ongoing challenge. But I know that's a challenge too for teachers and people in the Scouts and all sorts of other people as well too. And
it seems to me though that what you're describing is reaching out with love to both sides, to the perpetrators and to the victims, and that's a very big challenge.
Well, I suppose in both cases, I mean, I see them as real people that they've... I'm talking about the perpetrators now. When you know all their background and all horrible things often that have happened in their life too, to have shaped it the way it's turned out. Well, I think that gives you some understanding of it.
Without for a moment excusing the crimes and the terrible nature of the crimes, but the humanity of everyone who is concerned here. My guest here on 666 ABC Canberra is Bishop Pat Power. He's about to retire. Contrary to reports in American media, he's not being shoved out by the Vatican, but we are reflecting on what's been a very rich life here in Canberra Goulburn. He's a local boy, born in Coomer and grew up in Queanbeyan. You're with me, Genevieve Jacobs. Father Pat, much of your mission has been in reaching out to the downtrodden of all kinds, but when you reach out, it always strikes me that you do meet people absolutely on their own terms, that you go without the least pretension or reserve or patronage towards them. Tell me about your feeling of how you encounter the downtrodden.
Well, I think it is just what you say, Genevieve, seeing people just as they are and recognising them as unique human beings. When I became bishop, my mother was still alive at the time, and people used to say to me, "Your mother must be very proud of you, you know, because becoming a bishop." And I'd say, "Well, yes, she is proud of me, but I know that if I had made a mess of my life, that her love for me would be even greater." And I think that's what I try to see in the people around me, to see the beautiful qualities that they carry, but also too the shadow side that can be part of their life as well, and also the way in which life at times doesn't always deal a fair hand to people. And I'd say that the way in which I see people deal with tragedy and hardship and do it so beautifully. And when people say to me, look, you know, what a great life you've led. This happened to be in Queanbeyan right on Sunday. One of the ladies that was there has been a lifetime friend of mine. And her husband's in a nursing home at the moment and will be for the rest of his life. And her whole life is just around him and not doing it grudgingly, but with such... with such joy and everything, and I might add, she's brought up 8 children as well. So when people often say to me that, you know, you have a busy life, and I say, whenever I'm feeling sorry for myself about being too busy, I think of a mother with a new baby, and that puts it all into perspective. So I think just being able to see each person as a unique human being and someone that I'm able to easily embrace and love has been a great gift to me.
Who do you think is marginalised within the church itself?
When I spoke at the Oceania Synod in Rome in 1998, I spoke about marginalised people in society and in the church. And the 4 groups of people that I singled out in the church were married and divorced people, priests that have left the active ministry, homosexual people, and women. And I'd say that's as true today as it was then. And I often see very beautiful people that really don't feel that they belong anymore. And really, I know that they're closest to the heart of Jesus in a way, and yet they don't feel at home within the body of Christ in the way that they should. And that's really what I try to encourage all the time, to help them see that they're part of it, and to see the people that are still comfortable practicing their Catholic faith to try and embrace those people, because the name Catholic means universal and all embracing, and I think sadly often the reality is the opposite to that, and I think that's a challenge for all of us to embrace those people and to be non-judgmental in the way that we do that.
How do you respond then to current debates such as the one we're having about gay marriage, this notion that we should have a legal institution that binds 2 people who love one another and who choose to spend their lives together?
I must say I'm a little bit... I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that, Jennifer, but you had.
I've gone there, I'm sorry.
No, please don't apologise, because I think it's on the minds of a lot of people. Yeah. And I've been quite a supporter of homosexual people. And in fact, I've got a funeral coming up in the next couple of days, and I've been specifically asked to do that because of the understanding I think I have of gay people and their journey. Sometimes I've got to say that some of the things that the gay community does worry me a little bit. I mean, the whole the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, I feel that's sort of right in your face, and I think sometimes the push for the recognition of well, calling gay unions marriage, that comes up with a little bit of that. And yet, on the other hand, I haven't really spoken out against that, because I just think that there are enough people that are, you know, knocking the gay and lesbian community, you know, without me joining in that chorus. And I've tried among the bishops to be someone that's just saying, look, try and look at the other side of things, and most of all, try and listen to those people and listen to their families and everything as well.
Can we draw a separating line between church and state on this one? Is that an appropriate way
to proceed? I think that maybe is a way forward with it, and certainly I wouldn't ever want priests to be in a position as marriage celebrants where they're somehow or other feeling constrained to officiate at a ceremony like that would compromise their So I think what you're saying is probably a way forward. I had a little moment of grace yesterday, as a matter of fact. A lady rang me that I've known years ago, and we hadn't been in touch, and their marriage broke up, and I could understand why. I was asking how life was treating her, and I took my courage into my hands and said, "Do you have anyone in your life these days?" And I got quite a shock, but she said, "Well, actually, there's another woman in my life."
No,
I was just thinking maybe she's found someone else and got married again or whatever. Yeah. But I thought it was beautiful that she could share that with me. And what I said to her, I said, I hope that that's brought you happiness. And she said it had. And I said, well, look, I hope that you see that that's God's blessing to you both. And she says, yes, it has been. So, I might be hung out to dry for saying things like that. But, I mean, that's exactly the way I would approach it.
Nell's just called and she is worried about you retiring early and supporting yourself. Now, you're not leaving the church, Father Pat.
Certainly not leaving the church. And one of the things I'm hoping to do in retirement is to try and encourage people to be part of the continuing life of the church and to have more time to do it. What I'm saying to people is that what I'm retiring from is meetings and bureaucracy. And I hope, having been relieved of that, I'll be free to do the things that drew me into the priesthood in the first place. So I hope to be very much part of the life of the church in that way.
And I've got another text from Joe in Weston who says, please come and enjoy your retirement, in inverted commas, with us here in Weston Creek, Father Pat, with your grace. But it will continue to be a busy life, won't
one
it?
Of the things I've got to be careful of, I've decided that I'm supposed to be saying the end of June. It's now spread out the middle of July, but to go away for a couple of months to tell myself and to tell other people that I have retired, but after that to come back and to help the priests, because they're really short-handed at the moment. And I had agreed with Archbishop Mark that I'd continue to do confirmations too, but that'll depend on whether the new Archbishop wants me to do that. So I don't really intend to walk away from anything, but really hoped to embrace it even more than I have been able in the last little while.
And perhaps just finally, what's brought you the greatest happiness as a priest?
I think the interaction with people. Yeah. It's been, and to be able to be so privileged to be part of their lives in their, in their good times, but in their bad times as well. And I've found that really very humbling. And I often say that as a priest, well, hopefully I have given something to others. But what I've been given in return has been just a beautiful gift and grace to me.
And perhaps a bit more time to go to the footy, perhaps a bit more time to enjoy those
well,
great
Well, maybe those things too, but I haven't felt too deprived with all of that anyhow. I've tried to keep a fairly balanced life, and I get to the movies occasionally and go and see Souths whenever they come down here to Canberra, and they're doing all right this year too, so that might be a nice omen as well.
My guest has been Father Pat Power. Now he isn't wearing the Souths beanie, but he is in the traditional bishopric hand-knitted jumper, which has come to be, a defining feature of your leadership. I've got another text that says, I was asked at a Manning Clark lecture on refugees, etc., if I appreciated James Hare's spiritual Judeo-Christian opinions. Well, I don't see the difference, Pete says. What is the colour of love? Perhaps the colour of love is an appropriate note to end this on. Pat Power, how wonderful to have you here in the studio. And the very best of our wishes go with you as you go into retirement. I think it's going to be pretty busy retirement by the sound of things. And thank you very much indeed for taking the time to be here.
Thanks to you, Genevieve, and thanks to 666. I've had some lovely interviews here, and I must say the ABC has always treated me fairly, even if the Sun Herald occasionally mucks it up.
Oh, well, I tell you what, you're on the Huffington Post these days. The American intelligentsia are reading all about you too. Thank you, Pat. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Genevieve.
And Pat Power, retiring at the end of this month.